Welcome to week number 48. This is now nearing towards the end of the year. Today is the 4th of December, and if you haven't started Christmas shopping yet, now is a good time to start doing so. Just a note for myself and Dawn, we're going to be stopping these podcasts now, and we're going to be firing these up again in mid-January. And we're going to be doing the same thing for the newsletter as well. Reasons are twofold. Number one, we need a break. And number two, news flow is actually quite so as far as the Christmas period is concerned, especially from South African sources. So we look forward to chatting to you again midway through January. And obviously then there's going to be lots of new things to cover. So as we enter and as we kind of close down this year, Dawn, the Dow Jones now for the month up circa 6.4%. We're just waiting for the indices to finally be calculated with the dividend flows and so on. S&P 500 up 5.4%, the NASDAQ up 6% for the month. And then if we go across into Europe, the DAX is up 7.95% for the month. The Eurostox 50 was up 5.81% for the month. Now over the year, Dawn, or let us go year to date, the S&P 500 is close to 20% up for the year to date. The NASDAQ is up 36% year to date, and Eurostox 50, which was really, really in the index world, nobody wanted to put money into the European area. Their year to date stocks are now up 16%. I speak a little bit later on today. I'm going to be chatting about sentiments and how you should potentially be switching those things off when you're trying to invest over long periods of time. Rand dollar at 18.63, Rand against the euro at 20.29. And then if we go across into the bond world, US 2-year yields are at 4.55 and US 20-year yields are now at 4.56%. So all round, actually, a great November, Dawn. I think we've broken certain records. You've written about it quite extensively, right?
Yes, absolutely, Corby. And, you know, maybe we're picking a good time to take a break. Maybe this, you know, nothing will happen. It'll all coast along. We won't get a nice, instead of a Santa rally, a Santa crash or something along those yes. lines. And just as a quick aside, if you aren't sick of our voices by now, having done this for a full year, then I will be running Michael Avery's news program next week, which is also his last news program of the year. And so if you aren't sick of my voice, you can tune into DSTV on 838 and have a listen. Classic Business on Fine Music Radio at 6 p.m. every evening. And of course, it's on their website as well. But yes, yeah. Corby, long may this last. And if it comes down, may it come down gently.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Dawn, because if you go back to October and markets were selling down, and I could just see it in portfolios and I could just see it right around, you know, I could just, and the doomsdays were out. The bears were out telling everybody that this is the start of the absolute cataclysmic event that everybody has been waiting for in markets. And there's been, the cataclysm hasn't come. Literally, markets literally just started slowing down on the negative side. And then suddenly we had this upward shift as far as November is concerned. And John, I really attested to one thing, and that is that the inflation expectations are coming in softer than what most people are expecting. And people are now looking forward to a 2024 where rates are going to be cut or where they believe that rates are going to be cut. And I think that's the fair assessment. I do think that some rates will start being cut in 2024. Jay Powell, Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair, continues to talk about, listen, we've got to be cautious. You know, we got to be thinking about these things. But when you look at the people below him, the people that make up kind of the council, you'll see a lot of them are talking about this already. They're kind of saying, listen, you know, we're going to have to start cutting rates. Now, we're not going to see, I think, 2% rates, but we might very well see rates kind of the circa 3, 3.5, maybe even, you know, somewhere there, I would say, is reasonable. And remember, every time they cut rates, it changes the impetus for equities. And I think equities are now looking forward to that and saying, listen, I think this could be the future potentially coming forward. Now, remember that a large portion of this that's busy happening is front running what's happening with earnings. So this earnings season that comes out in January is a really decent earnings season, or at least just matches expectation. So even if it's negative, but they just match expectation, markets are not going to sell down. Markets are just going to flatline because they're looking forward to rates coming down in 6 months, 12 months, and then even they might even start looking forward into 2025 as we exit the first quarter in 2024. So quite a different environment got going. Dawn, now let's just go back to 2023. Let's start right at the beginning of 2023. Dawn, we've seen lots of clients 2023. We've seen lots of new investors. We've spoken to a lot of people. And I think for me, the standout for me for 2023 and the biggest question from all investors is, where do you think markets are going to go? Where's the currency going to go? Where should we be placing money, right? And sometimes, I don't know, is that the right question to be asking?
More along the lines of, should I be putting my money overseas, and at what price, at what exchange rate should I be
Yeah, there's another
putting
question.
it overseas? I mean, that has been the big question, right throughout the whole of this year, and it continues to this day. But I think one of the things that has come out of this year is more of an understanding among the investors, not to make a knee-jerk reaction, not to push everything offshore, but to get a very good understanding of what your future needs are and what your future goals are. In other words, am I going to stay here? Am I going to be a global citizen? Am I going to move somewhere else? And to start aligning your funds accordingly. And that just requires some time to sit down and, I sit and help my clients with, in a sort of a devil's advocate way, to say, what is it that you want? How much money you what do you want here? How much money do you want offshore? Do you have kids offshore? Do you support them? All of those kind of things, instead of making that knee-jerk reaction, because we saw, particularly over COVID, and I think this is why clients are now listening and being much more cautious and much more planning focused, is there was so much knee-jerk reaction going on during COVID. They felt that South Africa was going to go hell. Listen, they felt the world was going to go to hell, and let's get
Yeah,
as much money
absolutely.
offshore at any cost. And that didn't work out well for most people. I mean, there were people taking 36% knock in their pension funds just to get it offshore, and then taking it offshore at 19 to the dollar. It was insanity. But sense has prevailed, and there are far more options. I think this has also come out of COVID as well, is that post-COVID, there are actually more options for South Africans to live and work abroad than there were before. It's not a case of, I'm going to have to sell everything here and go buy somewhere else and go and make a living somewhere else, because, and I'm very restricted, and these are the only places I can go. I can only go to Dubai and a couple of other places. And that's it, it's all opened up, particularly if you have skills.
No, absolutely. Dawn, I think the standout thing for me for 2023 was we entered 2023 off a pretty poor return environment in 2022. And I think a lot of people were tainted by that. A lot of people looked at that and said, you know what? It's been this bad. 2023 can only get worse because rates have now escalated to this very high point. And I'm looking forward into a 2023 where there could just be cataclysmic events that are happening. And I think a lot of people waited on the sidelines in the hope that, and I'm speaking really to the bears here, people were hoping that things would get a lot worse so that they could get involved in markets. And really speaking, if I, as a fund manager, I kind of look across 2023 and the biggest single opportunity came during that American banking crisis. You remember that whole thing that happened with some mid-sized banks starting to fold in America just because the rate environment was so high and they couldn't match their obligations. And that led very specifically to the second big thing that happened, and it happened in very quick succession, but that was where Credit Suisse got taken over by United Bank of Switzerland. Very quickly, the regulators got involved. But that period for about a week, week and a half, really provided an entry point in very specific companies. I think about, money lenders that we bought into portfolios and into the Worldwide Flexible Fund that I manage. I think about opportunities like that. And I look back now and I look at the returns that have been able to be generated from those kind of entry points. And that has been a good news story. Now, the problem is that when you stand at that event, which was really the first quarter of 2023, you don't feel like investing because you think by yourself, things are just going to get worse and then even worse and even worse. And this is where sentiment is just so important. You've got to almost switch off the sentiment and you've got to look at the facts in front of you. Remember that we're living in a world that is hugely connected from a central bank perspective. The world financial plumbing is one which is so connected and is so intertwined into everything that we do. And central banks are standing at the ready all the time to try and make sure that there's a smooth functioning of liquidity across the world. And that's exactly what happens in that first quarter of 2023. And other than that, we've really seen maybe a whole bunch of political things happening. We've seen wars. You know, we've seen the issue with Israel and Gaza. But none of those things have really impacted markets in a very, very significant way. From that point forward, we've really just seen these nuanced movements around inflation expectations and where PMI is going to go and GDP and so on. And yes, the doomsdays were still out. But really speaking, from the first quarter in 2023, I remember I was in the Worldwide Flexible Fund. I had upwards of 50% cash in the portfolio at that point, and I significantly moved that down by just getting exposure into companies and into ideas. And that happened to be the right thing to have done for 2023, but not an easy thing to do. So I want to say to everybody listening to this, when you're sitting and you're looking at a market and you're looking at your very hard-earned money, know that if you invest today, you are buying companies, and if especially if you buy world-class companies. So I'm not talking about buying inferior businesses. I'm talking about what we do, which is buy world-class companies. If you do that, remember that these people are working on a daily basis, trying to find a way to maximize their own return on capital inside these organizations. Long before you know that a region has gone negative or a region needs retweaking, these people are already aware of that. They've already gone and taken the inventory and shifted it to a different region because they're trying to profit from these things. They've got networks that they're trying to run in these economies. And you too can profit from this. You've got to just be invested. But the wrong question is to sit on the sidelines because it's never going to be an ideal time to invest. Hey, Dawn.
Yes, absolutely, Kobe. And I think one of the important things and one of the important lessons from the Credit Suisse and the mini banking crisis is that that's all it was. It was a storm in a teacup, right? The American banking associations jumped all over that mini banking crisis to make sure that it didn't escalate into a new Lehman Brothers incident. And there are still some minor banks having to take advantage of the accommodations that were made for those smaller banks, but that liquidity was kept alive. And in Credit Suisse, Swiss Central Bank stepped in. They had stepped in a decade before with Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse's problems go back well over a decade. It's probably going to be turned into a mini series because it was mistake after mistake after mistake until central bank really at the end of the day said, enough already. Listen, you just merge with UBS and we'll get on with it. And there was no hoopla. They just quietly, quickly and quietly got on with it, merged, retrenched and did everything else. That is, I think was a sent a very important signal to the markets is that these central banks are not going to allow another Lehman Brothers opportunity to come and decimate the banking system and the liquidity system like it did in 2008.
We're talking about central banks now, and they were on point. They came in over an ensuing end of a week and a weekend, and they sorted the thing out. And look, Credit Suisse Tier 1 bonds took a hit. And I think a lot of investors were not happy with that. But as you've just rightly pointed out, you knew what risk you were taking because Credit Suisse for a decade had been in trouble, either with a regulator in Switzerland or the regulator in America or somewhere on the planet. And they had been begged for a decade to try and change what they did until finally the regulator in Switzerland said, enough. We got to do something different. And they literally handed over that business to United Bank of Switzerland, which now is a behemoth of a business. And I mean, the doomsdays are out again. Somebody sent me a clip the other day to say, hey, UBS is now too big to fail in Switzerland, and this is systemic risk across the whole globe. Yeah, it might be. That's not untrue, but that's no reason not to invest. I'm not saying invest in UBS. I'm just saying you can't taint the whole industry because you think UBS is going to take the whole financial system down. I think the regulators have already figured that out. You know, I think that's the other thing that I've learned in 2023. A lot of people think they're smarter than the market. And the reality is that we're not. You know, it's amazing. Stock goes from X price on day one, and there's some news that hits, and it goes to Y price, which is 40% lower, let's assume. And you go and you do the fair value calculations at the new price based upon the news that has come in. So that's the price. Why? Because the market knows. The market is not silly. The market knows what's going on. So to profit from a market, sometimes you've got to be very smart and you've got to know something that the market doesn't know, which the average layman just is not going to know. I made the point just now. If you bought a world-class company, they already know that a certain region, like say, for instance, China, is got less sales coming through than what another region comes through. And they've already shifted their inventory long before your numbers that you can pick up can actually show something like this. So you're buying world-class companies. If you're doing these kind of things, you're doing business with the best in the world, ultimately. Dawn, interesting, South Africa written about it this week, that the SARB has confirmed last week that it's in talks with National Treasury to find a way to top for our foreign exchange reserves. I mean, is that even legal?
I wouldn't have thought so. I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah.
But that statement came from the Reserve Bank, right? And the Reserve Bank is an independent company. It is independent. You know, that's the whole thing about it. I mean, we've spoken about that at length. So that to me was very worrying. And the governor of the Reserve Bank didn't actually go into it in a hell of a lot more detail. This note was just formed part of the financial review that they produced twice a year. It was literally a sort of a one or two liner, and everybody said, oh, wait a minute. So it's worth watching. You know, it's definitely worth watching. If something comes out of it, I will be sort of bringing it up at in the radio show.
Let's hope. I mean, I often central banks do this kind of thing. We had a case during the year for 2023 as well, where a central bank was thinking about, you know, about the impact of doing something. And then they kind of said, listen, we're just writing a paper about it. Just calm down. I'm hoping that this is, you know, obviously somebody that's pretty left leaning inside the bank saying, listen, we could do something like this. I hope the governor kind of just goes, I hope this goes away, you know, at the end of the day. And then also remember, 2024 is an election year. Dawn, I don't know if you've seen any polls that have been done by the different research organizations, but it's interesting. They've got the ANC at circa 40%. Let's call it somewhere there. You know, it could be 39, could be 42, but it's somewhere there. But then I've seen numbers for the new multi-party coalition up at 36%. That could be interesting, eh? I mean, it's not enough to form a government, but that kind of shows you how the mindset in South Africa is busy turning.
Yeah, very interesting, Corby. But you know, obviously, my major concern is that the EFF at 15, 16, 17%, if they decide to go into coalition with the ruling party, even though they swear blind that that's something they'll never do, we're out of the frying pan into the fire, quite frankly, because Julius will demand all sorts of things, including probably the vice presidency and God knows what else.
No, I mean, I suppose the big risk. That is the big risk. And one can only see how that pans out. And anything that we say, you know, is really just speculation at this stage around how that thing kind of plays itself out. I can't believe that the ANC and the EFF are not talking about this and seriously, potentially behind the scenes, because they must know about this. The other problem also is that if you've got the multi-party coalition up at 36%, and look, let's assume they get to 36, 37, with some luck to 40%. I don't know who else joins them in order to form a majority. I mean, perhaps the IFP. We could potentially come in with 6-7% of the vote, and maybe you've got some scraps, you know, that join that multi-party coalition. But it's a changing landscape. And that changing landscape, if you take away the power from the ANC that no longer runs the country, because we can see the failure in Transnet, Portnet, various other entities. You just have to live in this country to see all of that happening. But if you take away that power and you don't necessarily have this coalition that I think a lot of people are fearful for at this stage, don't think that could make for a different world that we're living in. That could be quite interesting.
It could, Kobi, but you know, if the EFF does go into a coalition, they're going to make several demands. And some of the demands are going to be acquisition without compensation gets put on the top of the agenda. The NHI gets put on the top of the agenda, neither of which are going to be good for the country. You know, never mind the xenophobia that goes with it. I mean, I don't know whether you know, but you know, Julius has been declared a persona non grata in Kenya, Botswana, and a couple of other areas. And Zimbabwe, they won't even give him a visa to come and visit.
Oh, really? I didn't know this. I didn't know this. This is very interesting.
Because of his because of the xenophobia that's with it, they won't give him a visa.
Oh, really? Okay, I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, look, South Africa is an interesting place to live. You know, may it not be for the faint-hearted. You know, and as we exit 2023, and we're going to be seeing all of you and listening, hopefully you'll be listening to us all in 2024. It's going to be an interesting year. Thanks for your support during 2023. Thanks for listening to us in 2023, and very interesting year. And it was great to review it with you, our listener. Happy festive season, and we'll see you on the other side. Thanks for listening.